Welcome to the Orange County Catholic Radio Show on AM 1000 in Orange and San Diego counties and on AM 930 in Los Angeles County. Each week, we bring you compelling conversation with church leaders and laity, talking about the things going on in our diocese and discussing the important issues that impact the world around us. We're coming to you through the good offices of Immaculate Heart Radio from our studios on the campus of Christ Cathedral in Garden Grove, where Catholic faith is crystal clear. Here now to introduce our guest and today's topic is your host, Rick Howick.
And welcome to Orange County Catholic Radio. I'm Rick Howick, your host, and with me today is Dr. Pia De Seleni, and we're going to be talking quite a bit about her role in the Diocese of Orange and how she is engaged in empowering people, especially women in ministry. So with that in mind, I'd like to ask you, first of all, to say thank you for coming, and then if you'd be so kind as to lead us in a word of prayer.
Sure. Thanks for having me on. Lord, we just ask that you send your spirit to enkindle in us the fire of your love. We also ask that your mother surround us with her mantle so that we may experience her protection and the love that she had for you. And we ask this in your name. Amen.
Amen. In the name of the Father, and of the Son, and of the Holy Spirit. Amen. And Dr. De Seleni received her doctorate of theology, summa cum laude, from the Pontifical University of the Holy Cross in Rome. And before that, you were at Thomas Aquinas College. You've had awards that were given to you directly by Pope John Paul II. You've had a lot go out at your career. Tell me, first of all, what are you doing now? And then I want to go a little bit in what got you here. So, Dr. De Seleni, who are you? And what are you doing?
I'm still figuring out what I'm going to be when I grow up. No, so I'm a theologian. I've been in academia with the Augustine Institute for 2.5 years. That position is coming to a close, and I will be continuing in the role that I've had as a theological consultant to the Office of the Bishop of Orange. And so that's a unique role. It's unique because frequently these appointments are made for religious or clerics, not to lay people. It's unique whether it's given to a lay man or a lay woman. One of the things that Bishop Vann had in mind, I think, when he did this, the reason he made it an appointment, and it's this official language to the office of the bishop, is he wanted to make it clear that I am advising him insofar as I have the theological credentials and insofar as it's his office of the bishop. He wanted to make it clear that it wasn't just a personal friendship, a personal appointment, or so forth. And so the formal language actually is quite significant, and I appreciate it because he's both acknowledging the seriousness of the role and also the credentials that I bring to the role.
So what is it that you do in this role?
So it's a bit ambiguous, but I'm available to consult with him. Let's say if there's somebody's asking for his imprimatur on a book to review the text. And to make sure that everything's orthodox and so forth. Helping him with columns, reviewing work that he just needs a second pair of eyes to look at it and that with a pair of eyes that has a theological background, helping him with his columns and so forth. And so again, it's kind of a fluid role. It's kind of pinch hitting.
It would be quite easy for a bishop, say, to get on an airplane and make some off the cuff remarks that might get taken out of context. Your role is to help prevent that from happening.
That would be the communications director's role.
Well, we'll bring him on as well. But in other words, when you're looking at something he might write or something that he's looking at, you're going to look to see and perhaps discuss with him there's a theological concern that this seems to bring up or might be interpreted in a certain way, that kind of thing?
Right. And more often than not, it's he wants to highlight certain things and I help him kind of pull that together and also to get a certain tone out and – you know, really, I think Bishop Vann, it's very important to him, I think, to have a constructive tone and always to, we have that expression, sentire cum ecclesia, to sense with the church. And so I think it's very important to him that this is in his work and in the work that's coming out of his office. And so he's looking for constructive input.
Now, on a personal level, I'm kind of curious. Your undergraduate was at Thomas Aquinas College, which, of course, is still within our listening range at the other end of Los Angeles. You currently live in San Diego, so you're very familiar with all of Southern California. But my question is kind of personally, what got you so that you really wanted to go into sacred theology, dare I say it, as a career?
That's a funny story. I might my dad really wanted me to go to Thomas Aquinas College, and he said, you can go to any college you like. The only one I'm going to help you with is Thomas Aquinas College.
Nobody otherwise.
And so, and I was very naive at first. I applied to other schools and found out that, you know, they want your firstborn child and so forth. So I thought, well, I'll go to Thomas Aquinas College. Two things. One, at the end of the year, he's going to allow me, I'll convince him to transfer to another school. There are no basket weaving courses here, so everything's going to transfer over. And I said, you know, I like everything about this program except that theology course. I don't want the Baltimore Catechism shoved down my throat. And yet at Thomas Aquinas College, you're required to take all of the curriculum. It's all set. Everybody takes the same curriculum together, so there's no opting out.
It's what's called a Great Books program. So
right.
For the people who are listening who don't know about the program, basically there's a set of books that's published called the Great Books. I forget the publishers.
We draw from all different translators, so not one publisher.
Okay.
And
so
editions.
In your first year, you take a certain number of those books and read through them, discuss them in seminar style and paperwork.
And so,
second year, same thing, different books. Third year, fourth year.
And this is the way people were educated in Western civilization, women and men, for hundreds of years. I mean, Isabella of Spain, this is the type of education that she would have had by the time she was 13.
But if you wanted to take a course in some sort of neuropsychology, that's not going to be offered in the Great Books program.
It won't. But the Great Books program is probably going to give you good preparation for sifting through the data and the analysis that needs to be done in that neurobiology course.
So what was the result at the end of your first year at TAC?
In the first 2 weeks, I was hooked.
Oh,
and
wow.
I was absolutely hooked. And believe it or not, theology was the course that hooked me probably the most. And the tutorial style is you have, you know, about 12 to 15 students. And freshman year, you read almost the entire Bible. And I can't remember if the first book was Ecclesiastes. I think it was. And the professor is actually called a tutor because we learn from the work itself. That's what's teaching us. The tutor is a guide. And so the tutor, who's an accomplished academic, just sat down and said, what's this book about? And so here I'd been expecting this lecture style and, again, having something beaten into my head. And instead it was this process of discovery. And within 2 weeks, I had the conviction and experience that I was staring truth with a capital T in the face. And then theology continued to be my favorite course. When I finished at the college, when I graduated, I wanted to do something with theology, but I thought it was impractical. So I thought
it is impractical, but that's okay.
I thought I was going to go on to graduate work in philosophy and economics. And then I took a year off before going to graduate school, and I was teaching high school. And during that time, theology just kept surfacing as my first love. And so I switched gears. I mean, and it's always been a passion for me.
All right. So you ended up taking that year off. And then where did you go after that?
I went to the Angelicum in Rome. Wow. So that's run by the Dominicans. And I did what's called the first cycle there, the Sacred Theology Baccalaureate. And they gave me credit for everything I'd already done in the States. It took me 2 years to finish that degree. And then I switched to Santa Croce, which is another pontifical university there run by Opus Dei. And I did the licentiate, which is equivalent to a master's in the state, but actually more than a master's. It also, anybody with a licentiate in theology is qualified to teach at any Catholic seminary. And then I stayed for the doctorate, which is called the Sacred Theology Doctorate.
Okay. So how long ago did you get your doctorate?
In 2000.
Okay. That's long enough to have had some experience. What did you do with it? You said this was going to be a very iffy proposition.
It was. So I finished and I felt very – I understood very much Aristotle says in the Ethics that the young person shouldn't study ethics. And my specialty was moral theology, and I finished with a PhD in moral theology. I thought, oh, my gosh, I do not belong inside the classroom, not yet. So I actually went to D.C. and I did policy work. And the policy work helped me a ton because it was really more of a boots hits the ground type of thing. And I was the director of life and women's issues at the Family Research Council for several years. And so, and I was kind of a bridge between the policy people and the government affairs people. And I worked in both departments at different times, but I was the one that would kind of drill down or distill what the intellectuals were saying in the policy department and make it practicable for the people in government affairs. How does this translate? So, you know, one example was when we were working on the president's emergency plan for AIDS relief. This was the White House called my boss and said, you know, we want your support on this. And my boss said, we don't even know what this is. What is it? Sent over the legislation, and there were some really big red flags. So it aligned itself with a UN General Assembly document that was aimed at reducing the number of children born with HIV/AIDS.
Okay, there's only a couple ways to do that.
Right, and it didn't specify antiretroviral drugs. So it, you know, and there were some other concerns. Most of the money was going to condom distribution, even though there was empirical scientific data that that's not the best way to address this crisis. So we got involved, and my job with my colleagues was really, how do we make this concrete? So we did things like, is it because of the Rome experience, really a universal experience, I had contacts all over the world. And so I was able to contact people in the developing nations and say, you know, you're meeting with people there. For example, I contacted a school that had 600 families. Yeah, this is in Kenya. And I said, all right, your boots on the ground. What do your families want? Because my question was, why are we not listening? We're talking about countries which are predominantly Christian conservatives or Muslim conservatives.
Right.
And we have these very Western ideas that we're kind of imposing. Why don't we go to them and ask them what they want?
Very imperialistic in doing so.
Well, we are.
Colonizing.
We are. And, you know, one of my boss called it a condom airdrop. You know, lo and behold, out of 600 families, they had two families that wanted their children taught anything but chastity.
Wow. I want to continue this story because your life story is fascinating. And then, of course, what you are currently doing now, empowering people, is also fascinating. You're listening to Orange County Catholic Radio. With me today is Dr. Pia De Seleni. And we are talking not only about her life, but about what she does in order to empower. And we will be right back. Welcome back to Orange County Catholic Radio, coming to you from the beautiful campus of Christ Cathedral in Garden Grove, where Catholic faith is crystal clear. I'm Rick Howick, your host, and with me today is Dr. Pia De Seleni, who is working with the Diocese of Orange as an advisor to Bishop Van on theological matters.
Right.
And we were going over a little bit of your background and how you got into this, and you were talking about a fantastic story about when you were in Washington. The administration wanted to do something which sounded on the surface so good to try to help stop AIDS in Africa. And you found that there were a couple of red flags. You had called Kenya or people in Kenya in order to find out what the boots on the ground, the people there actually really wanted. And
right.
You were saying what you found out was they really wanted to have chastity education.
Yeah. And again, that supports all the data that Professor Green from Harvard has done on this issue. Similarly, we reached out to some Catholic groups in Mozambique, the Sant'Egidio community that had been there for 30 years, to help them to broker the treaty to end the civil war, had established hospitals. And, you know, what people there wanted were antiretroviral drugs. So it was, you know, I mean, honestly, what we did was kind of a listening tour. What is it that you want and need rather than us dumping it on you? And we still had to fight for some constructive things. I remember being on a call with my boss and somebody from the White House, and they said, you know, the person from the White House is just all upset. What is your problem with this? Why won't you sign this then? So I looked at my boss, I signaled her, and I said, can I talk? Because it's a speaker, you know. And I said, can I talk? She said, yeah. And I said, do me a favor. I said, would you do a word search for condom? So does a word search. It's like, comes out, I don't know, 172 times. I said, thank you. I said, would you now do a word search for abstinence? 3 times. I said, that's our problem. I said, it's the focus of the legislation. And so, you know, we were able to address issues like the fact, why are we giving money to countries that do nothing to stop sex trafficking, that rate high on the TIP report, the Trafficking in Persons report? Anyway, there were a lot of different things. I also worked on the bioethics issues. And again, this just really helped for me to flesh out the aspects of moral theology that I had studied. And now it was like the boots hitting the ground, really. And I think it's really shaped me, too, as a teacher, because when I go into the classroom, I have these very practical experiences that shape the way in which I teach,
sure,
the way in which I look at issues, and people are always bringing up the difficult issues, But because I've had all this experience, I'm able to help navigate through those situations.
So you said the bioethical issues. So when you were in this other position, you also dealt with death and dying, euthanasia, those kinds of things.
Euthanasia, embryonic stem cell research. It was fascinating. One time I was testifying before the Massachusetts State Legislature with Judy Norsegian, who is the editor of Our Bodies, Ourselves and the head of the Boston Women's Health Collective. Was. I haven't followed up with her in a few years. And so here we were standing side by side making the same point. And it was fantastic. I mean, she had all sorts of feminist groups that were against this because it's the commodification of women. In order to do embryonic stem cell research, you needed a whole lot of women's eggs.
Right.
Where are you going
to
get them? It's
you
a risky procedure.
Harvest them like it's a business.
That's right. And it's a risky procedure. And why? Who wants to be – what woman in her right mind wants to be injected with all those hormones and on and on and on? So you're going to target your most vulnerable populations of women.
Poor.
Exactly. And so we were standing side by side, and I remember afterwards I had the Catholic pro-lifers were asking me, well, when did you convert? You know, and here I am, a lifelong Catholic. And there was a state senator who was furious with me. He finally said, how can you be from the Family Research Council and speak like that? But it was a lot of fun. I mean, it was great, good for the cause, and, you know, it was wonderful. And working out all these issues.
So, okay, let's fast forward for just a moment. You, for the last couple of years, have been involved with a number of different things, and recently Bishop Van saw your resume, saw you in action. What happened that he decided he wanted to pick you to advise him?
Well, that's probably a question for Bishop Van rather than myself.
But what did he tell you? What have you been doing?
You know, he liked my writing. He liked the work that he was seeing that was public, and he was looking for someone to help him in that capacity.
So I go back again to the capacity. So what is it that you are doing with Bishop Van, or you anticipate that you're going to be doing with Bishop Van?
You know, again, it's this role as theological consultant. So anytime that comes up, helping to draft an article, if it's some type of a diocesan plan that he's working on, if and when he feels the need to consult with someone, I'm there, and he reaches out to me, and I weigh in with my opinion.
Okay. So let's wade into something for just a moment. So in your capacity, you are not only a layperson, you're a female layperson, and you're involved with a ministry that is very influential. We have a number of people around the country today that are really advocating an enhanced role, I think is a nice way of putting it, for women in the Catholic Church and how they access power, how they're able to both contribute and be respected. What do you see as your role in trying to help shape the diocesan engagement of those kinds of issues?
Well, first of all, I hope that I'm serving as an example. Secondly, what I'd like to do is to be provocative and open up the conversation. So in my doctoral research, I did an overview of feminist and gender theory to show kind of an evaluation of the question, why we're still asking questions about the role of women. And then I used the thought of Aquinas actually to develop a feminism of complementarity, or an integral feminism, one which sees men and women as complementary. And this was to answer John Paul II's call for a new feminism. And John Paul II had made the point that we were created with our differences. The tensions, in other words, the battle of the sexes, that's a result of the fall. The differences are not the problem. The problem is sin, right? Original sin. So I want to be provocative, and I want to take the conversation right now. We've been looking at the conversation. It gets very narrow. It's only in terms of ordination, priestly ordination, or perhaps diaconate ordination. And that's super narrow because most men aren't even called to that, right? And so then we're trying to take the women and fit women into this box. Rather than really, I want to expand the box, or as John Paul II said, we've been freed of this box. Like, we've broken it. Like, let's do something broader. And a lot of it, to me, seems not only thinking forward, but recovering our tradition. If you look at the history of the church, if you look at even just the art of the church, speaks volumes to how women were regarded. I think that we, particularly the church in the United States, I think we are still suffering, and I should use that word carefully, I admit, from the impact of or the influence of Protestant theology, which is very different from Catholic theology when it comes to women. And if you look at the history of the church, there's so much that we have lost. And I think before we start coming up with new things, we have to figure out where we came from and what our history was and the role of women.
What have we lost? You mentioned an interesting point there, that this was founded with an ethos of Protestantism as a country. that has an impact on in ways that a lot of people have no idea about. They really don't think in terms right. of what does Calvinist theology have to do with how we run our lives. Well, the Constitution was based on Presbyteriability. Just the way that we think about religion and what religion is a very Protestant-based idea. Is that what you're saying, that that then stifles us in some way?
I think it does, and also just the experience. I mean, first of all, take into account that modern feminism is born with the suffragettes, right, in a Protestant culture, right? And they're a uniquely American Protestant culture, right? And they're asking for rights and participation in society that they didn't have, okay? The right to vote in particular. But there were other things like, you know, the right to own property, to inherit, and so forth. These were things that in many Catholic cultures were already set in favor of women. The reason that California, for example, has community property laws is because our laws are based on the Spanish laws, which were here first, which are based on church laws, which saw women as having an equal right to property. Community property laws go back to Catholic precepts, right? So these are it's different ways of understanding and viewing women. There have been some good studies. One is a book that's called Women in the Days of Cathedrals, and it looks at women, I believe it's either the 12th or 13th century France, and the roles that they had. And these were in all Catholic communities. They sat on city councils, they owned property, they ran businesses, they were very involved. It's the view of woman changes in the Protestant culture, and it's very different from what Catholics have. There's a thing in Catholic art you'll see at different periods, particularly during the Reformation, Mary, the Mother of God, her femininity is absolutely explicit. It's pictures. She's with a breast exposed, you know, feeding the Christ child. And so some people get a little, you know, uptight about that, and they think it's immodest. Blah, blah, blah. I beg to differ with that, but that's a whole nother show. The point is that she truly was the Mother of God, and that's what that is emphasizing. She's not simply an incubator or a carrier, but she truly participated as the Mother of God, and it's a profound concept.
God didn't harvest her eggs.
Didn't harvest her eggs, and she wasn't an incubator, and Jesus actually, you know, his human nature came from her.
She wasn't someone that just basically did daycare for the growing God. Yeah. She was the person who imparted not only her body but her life to Jesus. In ways that would make Jesus genuinely of Mary, not just of the Father.
And all those parables that Jesus talks about, they're kind of household, and, you know, the salt, the wine, the leaven, and so forth. Where did he learn those? That's hanging out with his mom. I mean, holding on to her skirts in the kitchen and around the house.
She lost a coin somewhere, and she's going to be sweeping until she finds that coin.
That's right. And she was one of she and Joseph, I mean, his first teachers, but she had a unique role as a mother.
So your understanding of femininity then in the way that the Catholic Church would embrace is one that is actually one of recovery
mm-hmm.
so that we move forward by moving backward.
Exactly.
Okay. We're going to come back in a couple of moments, and I want to go ahead and explore that from a practical perspective as to where you see the role of women, how it's been changing both in the Diocese of Orange but also in society at large. You're listening to Orange County Catholic Radio. I'm Rick Howick, your host. And with me today is Dr. Pia DeSeleni, who is the theological consultant to the Office of the Bishop here at the Diocese of Orange. And when we come back, we want to engage a little bit more on some of the practical issues of women and their involvement in the ministry of Jesus Christ. We'll be right back.
Would you like an opportunity to read and discuss inspiring books by bright Catholic authors? The OC Catholic Book Club offers quarterly book titles reviewed and chosen by Bishop Kevin Vann. Every 3 months, members gather to meet the author and hear informed commentary about the book by local church scholars. Membership in the OC Catholic Book Club includes 4 books and tickets to the author forums. For more information, visit occatholic.com/oc-catholic-book-club or call 714-282-3045.
Welcome back to Orange County Catholic Radio, coming to you high atop the Tower of Hope in beautiful Garden Grove, California, in the offices and the studios of Immaculate Heart Radio. You're listening to Orange County Catholic Radio, and with me today as my guest is Dr. Pia DeSeleni, who is talking with us about the roles that she's encountered in how women work with the ministry of Jesus Christ. And one of the interesting things that you said, Dr. Seleni, was that in order to go forward, we need to recover what Catholic faith had for women in the past. On a practical level, here in the Diocese of Orange, if not worldwide, what does that mean?
This is a somewhat complicated question. Because obviously, you know, when we start to talk about leadership in the church, we start thinking about the hierarchy, we start thinking about ordination. And one of the reasons I think we have seen a clamor for women to be involved in what have been traditionally male roles as, you know, members of the hierarchy, as the ordained clergy, is that it's clericalism. Clericalism makes all those positions about power, not about love. And the thing that if you understand those positions in terms of power, it makes no sense why a woman can't serve, right? But that's not what they're about. If you go to the catechism, one of the first words used to describe the priest is servant, right? There's a whole love relationship here. It's a nuptial relationship. The priest stands in persona Christi, right? In the person of Christ as the groom to the church who is his bride. And this is a very real marriage. Not only is it a real marriage, this is marriage in its most excellent form. The marriage that we live as human beings is analogous. We're looking for that type of union. We're striving for that type of understanding, that type of love. But it is a very real love relationship. And clericalism fails us in that. It eliminates the love and it makes it about power. And it's just like a marriage. If you have a marriage that's about power, right, there's no love. And what kind of a union do you have? It's awful. Right. And usually at least one person wants out of it. Right?
At some point, yeah.
At some point. So you have to change the paradigm. The paradigm has to be about love. And again, it has to be based on this nuptial reality, the marriage between Christ and the church. All right. So then we start to understand this in terms of service and love. It changes the context. And again, we have to look at that very real relationship between Christ and the church. We can't waver from that. That is a reality that frames this entire conversation. But then I think we really can be very creative about roles of leadership for women. It's basically any role that doesn't require priestly ordination. And that's a lot of roles. I was with one very high-ranking member of the church at a meeting several years ago. It was a meeting with the Vatican in the United States. And he pointed out, you know, he's pointed out the top three positions after mine in my diocese or archdiocese, he said, are filled by women. And so women can serve in positions of leadership, but also let's keep expanding. Why do we only look at the role of women within the structure of the church, the formal structure of the chancery or the curia? Several years ago, Lena Dunham had done a really off-putting, well, that seems to be her style, but off-putting SNL thing.
That's a nice way of putting it, I guess.
SNL skit about Adam and Eve. And I said, you know, we've got women clamoring to be influencers in the church, and yet we don't have Catholic women. They do have these gifts. I believe there are Catholic women who have the gifts to be the Lena Dunham, the Tina Fey, with the talent. Leave apart the off-putting parts. But let's just look at the talent, right? We do have women. And look at how much those women shape the culture. Look at how much Lena Dunham has influenced a whole generation of millennials. I'm saying if we want to look for positions of influence, frankly, look outside the chancery. Because the chancery right now, sad to say, does not influence culture in the same way that media influences culture, the people who tell the stories, right? Business. Look at how much business influences the culture, right? There are so many ways to influence culture. Don't limit yourself to the structure of the chancery.
Coming out of a background myself where I'm familiar with diocesan-level administrative structures, not this particular diocese, I can tell you that it's the primary focus of most dioceses in the United States is to administer the business functions of the diocese. And the simple administrative needs to run a parish means that you have to have all the legal paperwork in a row, and you have to have all of the financial paperwork in a row, and you have to have all of the personnel things in a row. And everyone's a little bit afraid of the litigious atmosphere out there, so they don't want to get sued. And before long, you've pretty much neutered the voice of anything that could be said out of the diocese for the average diocese anyway. And then you add to that the standard problems that come with most large organizations of what I would call silo mentality. You get your own little area, and it's hard to communicate. One of the wonderful things about coming to the Diocese of Orange, while they have structures that unfortunately can lend in those directions, they have some – I've noticed that they have some very – intentional advances in trying to limit some of those things. But still, it's a diocese designed to empower the parishes and to empower ministries. The real power isn't in the administration. The real power is in those ministries.
Absolutely.
And that's something that I think a lot of people miss, is that if you're looking at trying to get into hierarchical power, I'm sorry, but it's a very sad state of affairs. Why would you want to do that to yourself? If you really want to try to influence people, do what we're doing right now. Get on the radio, write a book, go get your doctorate, go do something with ministry, go form a program that speaks to people who are in need on the streets of San Diego or Los Angeles. Go do something, and that doesn't require an XY chromosome to do that.
I mean, look at what Chef Bruno does here now at the cathedral, since the White House tragically burned. But what he does, the thousands of kids that he feeds, I mean, that's a very simple program inspired by his mother, Katharina. And look at the impact that he has. And that doesn't require, quote-unquote, power. It doesn't require ordination. Usually, I think my experience is that God puts us in places where we can have impact, and sometimes we don't realize how big of an impact we can have. Frequently, when I used to do more talks in the pro-life sphere, I had a lot of people asking me, you know, what can I do? And I'm just a stay-at-home mom. I'm just a father. I say, I'm sorry, but your job is the biggest of all. We would have a pro-life society if we had healthy families. The reason that abortion is even an issue is because the family has been disintegrating for a long time. Before Vatican II, I think, but that's, again, another radio show. But this has been disintegrating for a long time. And this is your work in the home. That is the most important, the most impacting. I cannot have the same impact that a mother and father have who form their children well to be active in the world in whatever role God calls them to. I can't have that impact. I will try and support it in every way that I can through my work. I hope that my work encourages them. But that work is actually the most important work out there, because it's going to shape the future. And we wouldn't have the mess that we have now if it weren't for the family unraveling for generations already.
One of the examples that comes to mind for me is this whole almost distraction of the female diaconate. And the reason it's I consider it a distraction is because what most of the people will point to is the evidence we have that there were, quote, female deacons, unquote, in the early church. And yet what they failed to understand is that that was a role that was not ordained. It was a role that was given to women for some very practical reasons. In the first couple hundred years, the way that we went about baptizing involved losing clothing at one point. And you didn't do that in mixed company. So you had to have servants, which is literally what the word diaconia means, deacon. You had servants who had to be of the same gender. It was not an ordained thing, but it was a way to serve. And what's kind of funny to me is that it's exactly the example of what we're trying to say we should be doing with everybody. It's not about trying to get a title and power. It's about what's your need. Can you fill that need?
Right. And I think, you know, the conversation with the diaconate, I mean, I really don't expect the Vatican to put out too much that's new. This question has been evaluated extensively throughout the years. And there is an important distinction to be made, which is, yeah, if we want to say the diaconate is no longer sacramental, there's no longer the element of ordination. This is just service. The doors are open for women to become deacons. I really encourage people to just look beyond some of these clerical structures that have been given so much importance simply because of clericalism.
Unfortunately, we've equated ordination, which has to do with identifying with the bridegroom, with Christ as groom, with the administrative powers of what often has to do with offices that these people end up filling. And what you were talking before about the archbishop who said, look around me, the people that fill the top three positions in my archdiocese are women, because this shouldn't be about whether or not you are part of that persona Christi. This should be about whether or not you can competently fill these positions and run these programs if you need to run a program. But as you pointed out, the mother who is caring for her child and raising a healthy child is doing a huge service. The father who stays at home and makes sure that that child has the direct and encouraged support to embrace who they are is fulfilling the greatest part of what their job description should be in the first place. It's one of those things that I think we get so distracted.
Yeah, and I would just quickly mention that, you know, at one point, it was actually bad manners to ask somebody what they did. It was good manners. What you would do is ask them who they are, what they're interested in, right? And our society has shifted to see an importance on economic output. You know, how much money do you make? What do you make? How important, you know, quote unquote, are you? And so we never get to learn who the person is. And good manners used to require that you ask questions so that you would learn who that person is. Because no matter, you know, they may make skyscrapers or clean toilets, but that doesn't tell you who they are. And good manners used to be about asking, who are you as a person?
One of the people I used to work with before he passed away was Clayton Bower. And Clayton Bower was one of the better apologists for the Catholic Church. And yet he did a job totally different from what that was. And you would never know unless you asked him specifically or shared it. Anyway, when we come back, I want to ask a few more practical questions. We've got a book club. I want to make sure we've talked about a lot of things. You're listening to Orange County Catholic Radio, and we'll be right back.
Need an idea for summer vacation? Why not join Bishop Kevin Vann and Bishop Tim Fryer for a first-of-its-kind Catholic cruise from Long Beach to Ensenada, Mexico? You'll be entertained by acclaimed musician Francis Cabildo, music ministry director at Santa Margarita High School, and director of Christ Cathedral Music Ministries, Dr. John Romeri. You'll also have the blessed opportunity to celebrate Mass at the Cathedral in Ensenada. It's all happening July 21st to the 24th. For info, call Travel of Orange, 877-538-0010, occatholic.com/travel.
Welcome back to Orange County Catholic Radio. I'm Rick Howick, your host, and with me today is Dr. Pia De Saleni. And we've been talking about a number of ways in which women are empowered in the church and how we sometimes confuse administrative power with actual ministry and the roles that women play in ministry. And I'd like to shift just a little bit and talk a little more on a practical level in the Diocese of Orange. What's going on here that is important for us to be involved with, for women to be involved with? And then I know that you wanted to talk a little bit about some practical things we've got going on. There's a book club that's out there that's dear and dear to your heart. Talk to me. What should women be looking for in the Diocese of Orange to become involved?
I think it takes prayer and discernment and just kind of exploring where am I called? What am I called to do? There are just so many opportunities. It's a diverse diocese. There are a ton of programs. The first place that you start is getting involved in your parish and finding out what's there. Is that where you're called to serve? But again, you know, I don't want to take away primary responsibility from the primary place that we're at in life. Sometimes our primary state in life has given us enough responsibilities to deal with, and we don't really have an opportunity to branch out because we're already loaded up. And I just would say don't underestimate, you know, the impact that we can have just with that, our primary state in life.
One of the things that grounds me as a husband and father is the very first description of the image of God, that we're created in the image of God, and the very next statement is, and male and female, we were created. We were to be open to life and subdue our earth. Let's see. Male, female, open to life, subduing the earth. That sounds like family to me. So that the best analogy, the first analogy that we get for the image of God is a family. And the closer we come to that, the better off we're going to be if we're engaging that the way that God would want us to engage in our complementarities and in all of the issues that surround subduing that earth.
And I just want people to not underestimate the impact of witness that provides to other people. You know, when families are strong and healthy or even struggling through a difficult period, right, and with the eye on the end goal, we can get through this, right? It is a tremendous witness to other families. And I recall a friend of mine whose parents divorced when she was very young. And she told me, she said, Pia, she said, when I was growing up, I loved staying the night at the house of friends whose parents were married. And she said, because I loved seeing a mom and a dad come out of the same bedroom in the morning.
There's hope that is conveyed in that. Even if your own family is struggling and having difficulty, there's still hope that's out there that God really is behind trying to make wholeness out of families. Yeah. And that our primary role, male or female, is that complementarity in the call to mission. Build a strong family of God.
Absolutely.
Tell me about the book club that we've got here at the Diocese of Orange. We had on an author who had been part of this, so our listening audience has probably been exposed to a little bit of it, but we've got a very exciting program going on here with Bishop Vann. What are you doing with this?
So I'm helping to pick the books and organize the events and moderate the events. And so if you want more information, the website is catholicbookclub.faith.
Catholicbookclub.faith. Okay.
And so what we set up is a program where you pay $80 membership, and that means that you have four books a year sent to you. They're sent at the beginning of the quarter. Then towards the end of the quarter, we have an event, and it will be a reception here at the Cultural Center and then followed by a panel discussion. And our last one just went tremendously well, I think in large part to James Day, the author. He set the bar very high.
Yeah, he's the one we had on. Yes.
Yeah, he was great. And so the next book is going to be When Women Pray. And so Kathleen Beckman, also from the Diocese of Orange, edited that. It's a compilation of essays from 11 women. I'm one of the contributors. And so we'll be having an event on July 20th at the Cultural Center. So, again, that book has been sent out. You can, if you want to get the book on your own, you can register and just pay a fee. I'm not sure what it is for the event. And then there's also a discount if you're a student. You can get I think it comes down to $60 a year.
Oh, wow.
Then we'll be doing in October, we're going to be doing a Born Again Catholic, How the Mass Could Save Your Life. And it's a new book by Timothy O'Malley. He's a Notre Dame theologian, and he's also the head of the Liturgical Institute. He will be flying out from Notre Dame for that event. So
when is that going to take place?
That will be in October.
In October. In Notre Dame, it's just getting cold. He's going to want to be on the plane.
Yeah, he'll love it. Well, I mean, people always love coming out here. That's that goes without saying. But the thing is, you can read the book on your own, or you can form a book club. And ideally, we'd like people to be forming book clubs in their parishes so that the culminating event is when you come to the event here at the cathedral. But you can also, you know, we have one person who's, they've decided to do a book club in the family. You know, they have grown children, and so everybody in the family is reading the same book. There's all sorts of different ways to structure book clubs. You can have them with wine, without wine. You know?
You can have a book club without wine? I've never heard of such a thing.
But these things, the idea is we want people to unpack these books. We're choosing books that are timely. We're trying to give preference to West Coast authors where we can. And we are trying to find books that are easy to read. We're not looking for the doorstopper books that are just too thick. They're great books, but most people aren't going to have the time to necessarily get through those. And also we welcome suggestions for books, but the idea is there's a lot of evangelization programs going on. We want to give people a chance to just kind of explore specifically the intellectual life and to have these conversations. So at our last event in April, our launch event, we had a presentation from James, very brief, and then we had a sit down conversation. So
his book was on Benedict.
Benedict,
and
right.
He did a wonderful presentation on a number of thoughts behind Benedict. But I understand at your event, they also had a birthday cake for his
90th.
For his 90th birthday.
Yeah.
Is there going to be cake at the next one? You know,
that's top secret.
Top secret.
We'll have something good.
I'm sure we will. So in doing this, what we're actually doing is we're literally getting the entire diocese on the same page.
Yeah.
Without it being any kind of an indoctrination. On the contrary, this is kind of like what you were talking about at the very beginning of our conversation about what you encountered at Thomas Aquinas College, where we're going to open a book and we're going to ask, what does this book have to say to us? And what do we have to say back in return to the book?
Well, and it was kind of fun because we had two panelists that ended up disagreeing, and we also had somebody in the audience disagreeing. So it was a very lively conversation. It wasn't scripted or anything. And, you know, somebody pointed out, like most book clubs, it went a little bit off, you know, into a tangent.
Okay.
But those are healthy.
Those tangents can be very good, though.
They can. They can be excellent. And I was excited to see people. I actually was excited to see people disagreeing because we don't see people disagree constructively. And this was a very constructive conversation. Different points of view, and I don't think that anything was settled by the end of the conversation because they were big questions, but all of those views were heard.
What's fascinating to me is that the diocese sponsored this book and sponsored this get-together. It's clearly on a figure who is very important to our faith, but also somewhat controversial, and we were willing to talk about it head-on, to be able to look at it, read about it, think about it, and then talk about it. As adults, as thinkers, as people who are engaging the truth, with that capital T you were talking about,
right,
where we find aspects of that truth. I want to thank you so very much for coming on. You've got a wonderful opportunity here to be able to not only engage people with this new book club that you've been putting underway and that you're deeply involved with, but also to have and facilitate conversation about how we can all be more involved, male or female. After all, theoretically anyway, in the gospel, there's neither Jew nor Greek, male nor female, slave nor free. theoretically, we ought to all be able to engage as one. And you're empowering. Your example is an empowerment, I think, just in and of itself. So thank you. Very, very well. Thank you so very much for what you do. You were mentioning before about the friend of yours you knew of who would say that just being able to be in someone else's home and seeing what an intact Catholic family was like, seeing the parents come out of the bedroom at the same time, is an example unto itself. To have a young woman like yourself who has gone through a very rigorous educational system in order to live a dream of serving Christ in a very responsible, very powerful, very loving, engaged way to empower other people, that's an example to young women unto itself. I have three daughters of my own. They're high school and beyond, and they're all struggling with what they can and cannot do, and they're all, knock on wood, and thank God, they're very faithful.
Mm-hmm.
And to see and have that kind of an example for someone like you is very, very empowering for women, I'm sure.
Thank you. I'm also part of the Catholic Women's Forum, which is a group of women academics out of Ethics and Public Policy Center in D.C., and it has been really encouraging. Mary Hassan leads this, and it's been so encouraging to see how she has networked a wonderful group of women across the states. And our last meeting, I think, was in March, and I was able to get another West Coaster out there because I don't want everything just to be inside the Beltway. But my hope is that maybe we can in the future do something similar on the West Coast, maybe even in Orange County.
That would be great. Do you have a website that people can get more information about you and what you do?
Yeah, the easiest one is moraltheologian.com.
Moraltheologian.com. Well, once again, I want to thank you so very much, Dr. DeSalenny, for coming in and for talking with us and to all of Southern California about what's going on here in the Diocese of Orange and how women can be very fully empowered. Would you please lead us in a word of prayer?
Sure. Lord, we thank you for the time that you have given us. We ask that you send your spirit so that others may see in us, not ourselves, but you. And we ask this in your name. Amen.
Amen. You've been listening to Orange County Catholic Radio, coming to you from high atop the Tower of Hope in beautiful Garden Grove, California, where Catholic faith is crystal clear. I'm Rick Howick, your host, and we will see you again next week.
We've got an awesome idea for your summer vacation. How'd you like to join Bishop Kevin Vann and Bishop Tim Fryer for a first-of-its-kind Catholic cruise from Long Beach to Ensenada, Mexico? You'll be entertained by acclaimed musician Francis Cabildo, music ministry director at Santa Margarita High School, and also the director of Christ Cathedral Music Ministries, Dr. John Romeri. You'll also have the blessed opportunity to celebrate Mass at the Cathedral in Ensenada. Did we say this is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity? It's all happening July 21st to the 24th, but there is still time to get your reservation. For info, call Travel of Orange at 877-538-0010. That's 877-538-0010. Or go to occatholic.com/travel. The Catholic Cruise to Ensenada, Mexico. A once-in-a-lifetime experience.